When your Alka-Seltzer tablets get down to 4, that's the time to buy some more.
Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vanderkirk speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. The Third Army has won a new bridgehead across the Rhine. With the frankness of complete self-confidence, headquarters admits that Montgomery's great American, British, and Canadian force at the northern end of the extended Allied line is now in momentary readiness to shove off. Colossal supplies of every sort have been accumulated in the forward area. General Bradley, almost pityingly, remarks that the Nazi champion from Italy, von Kesselring, has arrived to take command in the West at a bad time. Nazi resistance at the edges of the confined First Army East Rhine bridgehead has begun to weaken. During the day, more than 4,000 Allied aircraft pounded German targets across the river. The Red Army has driven a wedge between the Nazi defenders of the twin Baltic seaports of Gdynia and Danzig. Far to the south, the little-noticed Red Army offensive in Hungary is making steady progress. And now a word from Charles Lyon.
If this was another one of those Fridays when everything seemed to go wrong and the result is a touch of acid indigestion, try this for prompt, pleasant relief. Be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. You see, Alka-Seltzer can do two important things for occasional acid indigestion. It can give prompt relief from that upset, jittery feeling in the stomach, and it also helps reduce excess gastric acidity, and both at the same time. Yes, friends, it may well pay you to remember, for acid indigestion, be wise. Alkalize with Alka-Seltzer. And speaking of Alka-Seltzer, remember, when your tablets get down to 4, that's the time to buy some more. Now back to John W. Vanderkirk.
For several days now, some 40 miles of the most strategically inviting part of the Lower Rhine between Dusseldorf in the Ruhr and Arnhem in Holland have been obscured in a vast cloud bank of artificial smoke. A smoke so dense it has defied every effort of smarting, peering Nazi eyes to penetrate it. The German commanders cannot rid themselves of the conviction that where there is so much smoke, there must be a great and singeing fire. In that flat, war-torn region facing the level Westphalian plain, which leads into the heart of Germany, is concentrated the 21st Army Group under Montgomery. The grouping includes the U.S. 9th Army, the veteran British 2nd, and the Canadian 1st, which is three-quarters British. Somewhere not far away is a proportion of General Hodges' 1st Army, and for good measure, the recently activated and still somewhat mysterious U.S. 14th. The German watchers across the river must be experiencing all the sensations one has in seeing a rubber balloon swelling and stretching ever larger and larger, till one knows it must at any second blow up in one's face. General Bradley urges us today to be neither optimistic nor pessimistic. One must virtuously try to obey orders. When that sane, level-headed, experienced commander goes on casually to remark that the Allied armies massed solidly along nearly 225 miles of the Rhine's west bank, can now make a crossing most anywhere at any time. When General Bradley casually mentions that Montgomery seems to be ready to do just that, one does have a little trouble in keeping one's pessimism in first-rate shape. German reports indicate that numerous Allied patrols have already paddled across to look things over. One Nazi broadcast before our official confirmation admitted that assault troops of the ever-restless Third Army had pushed across the Upper Rhine in amphibious craft and had won a small beachhead on the farther bank. That effort supposedly has been made about 10 miles south of the city of Mainz. The significant point is the Germans are being compelled to keep on the alert all the way from the Dutch to the Swiss frontier. Since they cannot be strong enough to meet the Allied threat everywhere, they're forced to guess where the danger is greatest, with the certainty that whatever they do, we shall lose little time in finding out the weak spots they have left. Blessedly, the spring weather has for once been helping us and not the Germans. Today again, thousands of Allied planes flew in bright blue skies to pulverize what little is left of the cities of the Ruhr. It does not follow that an area which is bombed with special violence is necessarily the place General Eisenhower will choose for his great attack. There's a contrary possibility that, since experience has shown thus progress can be difficult in an oft-air-raided region, the assault will therefore come somewhere else. Somewhere else, most observers believe, will be north of the Ruhr Basin. In short, across the Westphalian farmlands east of Nijmegen, the selfsame sector where the first and boldest attempt was made to break through into Germany at the time of the airborne attack on Arnhem. The atmosphere is tense, expectant. It is sensed, though it is certainly not known. The big push may come tomorrow. It may indeed already have begun. It's not a coincidence the Red Army is reported to be attacking in force and to have gained 6 miles on the near approaches to Berlin. Now to NBC in Western Europe.
This is Roy Porter at Supreme Allied Headquarters in Paris. Headquarters in Paris has just announced that American troops have crossed the Rhine in another location and in addition to the Remagen Bridgehead. The operation began yesterday, and Third Army troops crossed the river without air or artillery preparation. The bridgehead, which has not yet been located, is officially reported to be expanding and enlarging. And today has been another glorious day in the air. 4 of our fighters and bombers, and yet there are some things that we are advancing our Allied cause that I really can't talk about. We here in Paris have been listening to the German radio, too. And there is really nothing that I can tell you that's new. The Siegfried Line is being mopped up. As a matter of fact, it's come down to a kind of a police job where the MPs go out and round up the prisoners. And then on the other end of the line, I've heard stories today about American aviators being shot down behind the German lines and coming out with prisoners. It is, let's say, a very funny process. And then, after all, we still have the battle lines, where they are and what they are. And the strange thing about this evening is that we know where they were, but we don't know where they are, because things are moving so fast and so furiously, and all of the effort, with one exception, is being made by the Americans, that we really have what is called in the Army an operational time lag. There is no blackout. And yet, we correspondents are far behind on the news. Let me repeat again. The Third Army has crossed the Rhine again, and in another location, and in addition to the Remagen Bridgehead. This is Roy Porter in Paris, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Our next direct shortwave broadcast comes to us from NBC in the Pacific.
This is Robert McCormick at Advanced Fleet Headquarters on Guam. Admiral Nimitz has just given us additional and revised information on damage done by the 5th Fleet in its recent attacks on the Jap homeland. The most specific data in the latest communique shows we've taken another enormous bite out of the Jap Air Force. We destroyed, or probably destroyed, a total of 731 Jap planes in 3 days. 281 planes were shot out of the air. 275 were destroyed on the ground. The other 175 were probably destroyed or damaged on the ground. Also, the communique says, we did a lot of damage to 7 of Japan's most important air bases on the Jap mainland. We hit Oita, an air depot guarding the entrance to the inland sea, and Kanoya Naval Air Station, probably the most important center of air power in southern Kyushu. And we also ripped into Omura Naval Air Station, one of the protecting fields for the great Jap naval base at Sasebo. We also did a thorough job on Kagoshima, another big airfield in southern Kyushu, and Saiki, considered one of Japan's most modern air installations with mile-long runways, and 2 other fields essential to the protection of Kyushu. Getting back to the figures on Jap planes destroyed, they represent an increase of more than 150 over those previously announced. In communiques we've had before, we announced 200 planes shot out of the air. Now it's 281. And we said we destroyed or damaged 100 planes on the ground. Now that's been jumped to 175. Otherwise, we continued to attack Chichijima and the Bonines with Liberators and P-51s, and also took swats at other Jap-held islands.
We take you now to NBC in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty in our nation's capital. The State Department has finally given the San Francisco meeting of allied nations and their friends a special name. It's the United Nations Conference on International Organization. The American delegates to the conference held a private meeting with the president late today. There are reports abroad in the capital tonight that Mr. Roosevelt has assured the American members that they'd have a great deal of freedom of action. In other words, the delegates were given to understand that the agreements of Yalta, such as the understanding on the voting procedure in a future world organization, the agreements are projected solutions. They are open to modifications if it becomes apparent that such action is necessary to bring about conference harmony. They are not final and unalterable. Up on Capitol Hill today, the House of Representatives extended the draft law in line with the recommendations of its military committee, without change. It's significant that the congressmen, many of whom have criticized various aspects of the draft law in recent weeks, did not cast a single vote against it today. There would seem to be a reason for this unanimity in Congress, a definite reason. Possibly congressmen know a little more about passing events than they're saying at this critical moment in the war. And don't let anybody ever tell you that a congressman doesn't know how to keep his mouth shut when he feels that it's necessary. He does. And what's more, perhaps we can all take a tip from Congress on this score for the good of the whole Allied cause. This may not be the day nor the hour to rip loose with careless abandon in any direction. It's a different kind of a day and a different kind of an hour. Incidentally, our incendiary bomb attacks on Tokyo by official check have knocked out 20% of the city's industrial capacity for at least 3 months. The reason why we're using incendiary bombs is because Tokyo has scattered her workshops throughout the capital. Meanwhile, back to Capitol Hill, the Senate has voted overwhelmingly against confirmation of Aubrey Williams as Rural Electrification Administrator. The vote was 52-36. Williams' friends said he was pretty close to a saint in the final debate, and his enemies thought he was a communist wearing horns. Williams himself is all in favor of investigating the Senate. It's time for people to look into what's going on down here in Washington, as he put it. Treasury men now estimate that their whirlwind tour of the Florida resorts looking for people who forgot income taxes has netted $100,000, and that's what happened in Miami and Washington today.
While we are waiting for John W. Vandercook to return with some more late news, listen.
The foundation of good health is good nutrition.
And good nutrition, friends, means getting full value from the food you eat. But first of all, your food must actually contain the necessary elements that help maintain good health. Your food should provide adequate proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. Your food should provide your necessary vitamins, too. But because of transportation, processing, and cooking, vitamins especially may be lost from food. So bolster up your meals with a single one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule every day. Start every day with one-a-day. The vitamins in one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules help you keep up your normal resistance to such infections as colds, help you keep your energy, nerves, and digestion up to par. Now, the Miles Laboratories have made it both easy and economical for you to get a basic vitamin supply every day. Here's our offer. Go to your druggist and get that $2 package of one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules, a full 60-day supply. Take one capsule every day for 60 days. Then, at the end of that time, if you're not pleased, you can take the package back to your druggist and he will gladly refund your money. Yes, friends, be sure you get one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules. For like all other Miles products, they are guaranteed to please you or your money will be refunded. Now back to the NBC newsroom.
Calcutta, armored forces of the Indian Army with Mandalay behind them are now driving south through Burma at the rate of 20 miles a day. Thousands of Japs appear to be caught in a pocket from which there's little chance of their escaping. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. I'll be back on the air again for 15 minutes tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime. And, of course, as usual, at this same hour on Monday. So, till tomorrow, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Friends, tomorrow night, the Alka-Seltzer National Barn Dance will entertain you from Aberdeen, South Dakota, where the Hayloft Boys and Girls are broadcasting for a special benefit of the Canteen for Servicemen in Aberdeen. Listen over most of these same stations at 9 o'clock Eastern Wartime tomorrow night. This is Charles Lyon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.